Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, Text Number 23. Sava ayam yat padam atra surayo.
Sava ayam yat padam atra surayo.
Jitendriya nirjata matarishvanaha. Pashanti bhaktyut kalitat malatmana. Nandesha sattvam parimarshitum arhati. Sava ayam yat padam atra surayo. Jitendriya nirjita matarishvanaha. Pashanti bhaktyut kalitat malatmana. Naneshva sattvam parimarshtum arhati. I'll go a little higher. Savai ayam yat padam atra surayo. Jitendriya nirjita matarishvanaha. Pashanti bhaktyut kalitat malatmana. Naneshva sattvam parimarshtum arhati. Saha
he
vai
by
providence.
I am
this
yet
that
which
padam atra.
Here is the same supreme personality of Godhead.
Sri Krishna.
Surayaha.
Great devotees.
Jita
Indriya.
Who have overcome the influence of the senses.
Nirjita.
Thoroughly controlled.
Matarishvanaha.
Life.
Pashanti.
Can see.
Bhakti.
By dint of devotional service.
Utkalita.
Developed.
Amala.
Atmana.
Those whose minds are thoroughly cleansed.
Nanu Esha.
Certainly by this only.
Sattvam.
Existence.
Parimarshtum.
For purifying the mind completely.
Arhati.
Deserve.
Translation.
Here is the same supreme personality of Godhead whose transcendental form is experienced by great devotees who are completely cleansed of material consciousness by dint of rigid devotional service and full control of life and the senses. And that is the only way to purify existence. Before I read the purport, the scene is Krishna's leaving. So the whole section is viraha bhav, the mood of separation. And there's a prelude The prelude is, the Kurukshetra battle has been finished, and the funeral has been performed for all the deceased parties in the battlefield. Maharaj Yudhisthira has been installed on the throne, and Krishna is preparing to leave. And three interludes come that are to check Krishna from leaving. One is Uttara comes, crying because this Brahmastra weapon has been sent . You need to sit in the chair or go right ahead?
Oh, I think I'll be okay.
All right. The Brahmastra has been sent to kill the child in her womb. So she feverishly prays, Krishna, Krishna, let this Brahmastra destroy me, but not the child in this womb. Please protect this child in my womb. This is the successor to the throne. Maharaj Parikshit, the only remaining descendant of the Pandava dynasty. So Krishna protects the womb, the child in the womb. So Krishna is getting ready to leave again. Queen Kunti comes. Krishna, Krishna, please don't leave. And beautiful, beautiful prayers. In Krishna's response, he smiles. He gets on his chariot, ready to leave. Maharaj Yudhisthira comes. Please stay longer. Sometime, please. Krishna stays. And he stays for 3 months because his reason for staying, specifically stated, is to pacify Maharaj Yudhisthira. Because he's feeling terrible. And so the next chapter is Bhishma Dev pacifies Yudhisthira. And even Krishna couldn't pacify Yudhisthira, but Bhishma pacifies Yudhisthira. And Bhishma passes, and he gives instructions to Maharaj Yudhisthira how to run the kingdom. So, this 10th chapter, he begins. He's ruling the kingdom. So, and everything is all right, so Krishna is getting ready to leave. And there isn't another incident to stop him, so Krishna's leaving. And then the mood of separation from Krishna and how attachment for Krishna is formed. And from that attachment for Krishna, detachment from all material things, but an intensification of deep, deep, deep attachment. And when there's attachment, then when Krishna leaves, it's... So there are various exchanges that are described. Krishna with the deceased, the wives of the deceased husbands or sons-in-law or sons. The sons of Dhritarashtra, 100 of them, were all killed. So they left wives. And there were some children. So the children they come out of the palace. And there's not enmity towards Krishna for what wrong has been done because they understand the wrong that was done. But they don't know, they can't check their emotions. So they're moving hither and thither and don't know what to do, and they start to cry, and they think this is inauspicious. Krishna's leaving, we're crying. They try to check their tears, rub the tears back into their eyes. Doesn't work, so they go up onto the palace, up on the rooftop, and gaze at Krishna from a distance in shyness. And the brahmanas singing their Vedic mantras, and the musicians playing their so many different types of musical instruments and It's a grand festival occasion, and Krishna's leaving. Off he goes. And so as he's leaving the city, there's the city residents. And again, the ladies are up on the rooftops because out of shyness and respect for Krishna, they don't want to come in Krishna's proximity, but they're talking amongst themselves in a way that's more appreciated by Krishna than the choice hymns of the Vedas chanted by the brahmanas who are down on the ground. And the reason, there are two reasons that are given. One is, it's chanted with such feeling. And the other is, it's very direct. Whereas Vedic hymns are sometimes indirect, like referring to Brahman instead of Bhagavan. And the ladies aren't about Brahman, they're about Bhagavan. And so this section is prayers. The sound vibrations that they're making in appreciation of Krishna. And so this is one of them. The first two were about three. First three were about Krishna's position as the source of everything and into whom everything rests at the time of cosmic annihilation. He's not just one of us. He's that supreme person. Like Mother Jasoda, who when she looked inside Krishna's mouth, she saw everything within Krishna's mouth, the whole cosmic manifestation and all the demigods and all the mountains and rivers and planets and species of life and everything inside Krishna's mouth. And she thought, whew, I better lie down, I'm seeing things. These are specifically mentioned. They're not well educated. They're not Sanskrit scholar, Vedic, elevated personalities. They're wives that are, they hadn't ever even before seen Krishna. They had just heard of Krishna. But now they're seeing Krishna and they're appreciating how fortunate we are. He who is that person, not, you know, the singularity, but the person from whom everything has come, into whom everything enters at the time of cosmic annihilation, and again by his potency it again manifests, and that the ability of the material energy to look like it's producing life comes by his energy, the deluding potency that makes it look like what it isn't, but that it is, that it comes into being, it's by his, it's, and here he is, and he's leaving. Then this verse is they're appreciating how fortunate they are to see him. Pashanti. And they're describing in the verse the qualification to see him, to experience. So, purport by Srila Prabhupada. As it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord can be known in his real nature, by dint of pure devotional service only. When I was reading this purport, I was thinking, almost sentence by sentence, Prabhupada is just paraphrasing verses of Bhagavad Gita. Bhaktyama mabijanati yavanyaschasmi tatvataha. So, it is stated here that only the great devotees of the Lord who are able to clear the mind of all material dust by rigid devotional service can experience the Lord as he is. So this is the Bhagavatam's version of the same message of the Bhagavad Gita. Jitendriya means one who has full control over the senses. So, there's jitta and ajitta. Krishna is ajitta. He's never conquered. And we're jitta. We're conquered. Achyuta and achyuta. So jitta, indriya, one who has conquered the senses. The senses are active parts of the body, and their activities cannot be stopped, especially the mind. Try chanting and stopping the mind. The artificial means of the yogic processes to make the senses inactive has proved to be abject failure. Even in the case of great yogis, like Vishwamitra Muni. Vishwamitra Muni controlled the senses by yogic trance. But when he happened to meet Menaka, a heavenly society woman, he became a victim of sex and the artificial way of controlling the senses failed. So Vishwamitra Muni was so intensely absorbed in his meditation, Indra got nervous. Uh-oh. He may be trying to become so powerful he'll take over my kingdom. I know, I'll send a heavenly maiden, Menaka. And just as she was just walking by and the tinkling of her ankle bells, because even when the senses are controlled, the ear is still active. And he heard the tinkling of her ankle bells, and it was all over. He opened his eyes, and he saw the beauty of Menaka, and Indra won. So the artificial, mechanical, non-devotional means of controlling the senses is an abject failure, even for such great personalities as Vishwamitra Muni. But in the case of a pure devotee, the senses are not at all artificially stopped from doing anything, but they are given different good engagements. When the senses are engaged in more attractive activities, there's no chance of their being attracted by any inferior engagements. And he cites authority. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, the senses can be controlled only by better engagements, and he has that italicized. So what's that verse in Bhagavad Gita? The senses can only be controlled by better engagements. Very good. Vishaya vinivartante niraharsha dehina. Vishaya. Vishaya means sense enjoyment. Vishaya. And a vishayi is one who's like sense enjoyment. Vishaya. Vinivartante niraharsha dehi nam. Dehi, for one who is embodied. Dehi, the body is deha, and one who is in a body is dehi. Dehi nam, plural. For those who are embodied, controlling the attraction of the senses, to enjoy the senses, is very difficult. But raso varjam raso pyasya pram drishtva devartate, it's very easily accomplished by experiencing higher taste. Pram drishtva raso varjam raso pyasya. So that's where the title of our cookbook comes from, the higher taste. We don't become attracted to eating. We're not attracted to eating so many things. That restaurants are filled with people eating those so many things, and they pay so much money to go eat those so many things. Not interested. because of higher taste from drishtva devartate. And that sense control, that's the message. When that higher taste has no higher taste. Okay, so in this hand, there's a lesser happiness. In this hand, superlative happiness. Which one do you want? It's not a difficult... I'm not sure. Not sure. But when there isn't that experience of that higher taste, it's very easy to fall prey to the lesser taste. Even things that we know are bad, like anger, or greed, selfishness, lust, you know, yuck. But, you know, we may fall prey to it. But when there's the higher taste, and one's experiencing that higher taste, this other thing just pales, it fades. Gone. The senses, again, italicized, the senses can be controlled only by better engagements. Devotional service necessitates purifying the senses or engaging them in activities of devotional service. Devotional service is not inaction. Anything done in the service of the Lord becomes at once purified of its material nature. So that's nice. Amala Atmana. So that's in this verse. Pashyanti Bhakti Utkalita Malatmana. Utkalita means developed. Developed in the sense that something that's already there, not something that's out here and you import it. It's something that's already there. Something that's already there is purity, like Prabhupada gives the example of a diamond. A diamond that's covered by mud and other kinds of caked on things. It doesn't sparkle. But remove the mud and it sparkles. It has a natural sparkle. But you can't see the sparkle if it's covered. So, same, we can't see that amala, atmana. There's mala and amala. Amala, atmana. Atmana is the self-identity. It's not, you know, something that we put on, like a cosmetic. It's our nature. The intrinsic happiness and intrinsic purity, it's our nature. And there's mala. There's this yucky stuff that covers it. And amala, atmana, is when the soul becomes completely, the soul's nature shines out naturally. When the coverings are removed, so material contamination, it's, we can blame it on material nature. Oh, the material nature has contaminated me. What can I do? But, you know, we asked for it. We wanted it. We want it to depart from, it's really dumb. It's really bad mistake. We want it to depart from purity and become involved in material contamination. And once involved in material contamination, it's very difficult to extract oneself from material contamination. Try it. On your own, you can't do it because, you know, we're weak. The condition of heart, Hridaya Dorbalyam. We know what's right and we still don't do it. This weakness of heart. Like the spark that's taken from the fire and it's put way over there. And the little glowing capacity is trying, but outside of the fire, it gradually subsides and extinguishes. Just becomes a piece of carbon. Take that piece of carbon, put it back in the fire. Glowing. Fire. So our
capacity for purity comes in contact with that which is pure. That's what's being said. Pashyanti bhakti ukalitad malatmana. The process of bhakti, the translation Prabhupada has written, by dint of rigid devotional service. So bhakti doesn't mean casual. Bhakti means uttam bhakti. Uttam means topmost, pure devotion. At least striving for pure devotion and being in the association of others who are striving for pure devotion. Then that little piece of carbon glows and becomes fire again, or the purity comes out. The purity is naturally there. Naturally there. And it's happiness. It's peace. It's everything that we want. It's love. It's joy. It's us. But we've departed from us. We've abandoned ourselves and gone to this other cuckoo land. That really doesn't make any sense. It's suffering. It's crazy. It's, you know, bad and mean and exploitative and harsh and... So, pashyanti bhakti, utkalita, utkalita again is developed, it's awakened. That dormant amalatmana, thoroughly cleansed mind, is how Prabhupada is translated. So, one can see Krishna, that's what these ladies on rooftops are saying. One can be eligible to see Krishna when one's mind, that jewel within, the heart has become fully cleansed by rigid devotional service. And two other things are mentioned, the previous, jitendriya and nirjita. That's nirjita, is thoroughly cleansed. Life. Matarishvanaha. So when one's life and senses are fully under control and one's heart has become cleansed by devotional service, then you can see Krishna. There's a very nice purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So many nice purports. But in the prayers by the personified Vedas, and he states very simply, the goal of devotional service is to see Krishna. But we can say the goal of devotional service is to awaken our love for Krishna. And we awaken our love for Krishna, we'll see Krishna. We have that, these three things, jitendriya, nirjita, matarishvanaha, and bhakti, amalatmana, mind cleansed, senses controlled, life fully directed. Not like a little bit directed, or a mix. Fully directed to Krishna. Then one is entitled. Arhati means deserve, last word. Then one has entitled oneself. This is the adhikar, the qualification. If one carries this, then one can see Krishna. And even if one sees, like the washerman, as Krishna was entering into Mathura, he saw Krishna, but he couldn't see Krishna because he was proud and arrogant. He couldn't see. Then, the material conception, we're almost done with the purport. The material conception, that which is, you know, what has to be cleansed from the mind. Chetha Darpana Marjanam. That which needs to be cleansed from the mind, this material conception, is due to ignorance only. That's a nice sentence.
Then he goes the other direction. There is nothing but Vasudev. Nothing but Vasudev. So this is paraphrasing. It's approaching a paraphrase of the verse from Bhagavad Gita where after many, many births and deaths, one who is on the path of knowledge may, they may not also, but if they reach perfection, they may surrender to Krishna. And what impels them to surrender to Krishna is the understanding that Krishna is everything. So Prabhupada says, there's nothing beyond Vasudeva. What's beyond the source of everything? There's nothing beyond the source of everything. The source of everything is the source of everything. There's nothing beyond Vasudeva. The Vasudeva conception gradually means bahu janma, many, many births. And who can stay focused on something for 5 minutes, what to speak of many births? But for many births, trying to find that which is the source of everything, gradually the Vasudeva conception develops in the heart of the learned. After prolonged acceleration of receptive organs, the jnanendriyas, knowledge acquiring senses. But the process ends in the knowledge of accepting Vasudeva is all in all. So that's the verse. Someone knows the verse? Bahunam janmanam ante. Okay, so it's very samahatma, so durlava. It's very difficult to find someone who has reached that. But so Prabhupada has made it really simple for our Western audience. The instruction is, my dear seeking soul, take your finger and touch your nose. And so you can go like this, or you can go like this. And that's indirect. You can also touch your nose that way, but you end up touching your nose. So you can just do this. Just surrender to Krishna. Or surrender to Krishna. I don't want to surrender to Krishna. So try to find Vasudeva by your flashlight. Look for the sun. Where's the sun? Little do they know, you don't need a flashlight to see the sun. You need a flashlight to see things when there's darkness, but you don't need a flashlight to see the sun. Sun means light. So when you find Vasudeva Sarvamiti, so this term Vasudeva in the Vedic literature can mean the all-pervasive Vasudeva. So that's the impersonalist like this. That's Vasudeva. It's the all-pervasive Brahman. That's how they take it. But in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is situated everywhere through his energies. That Vasudeva is the son of Vasudeva, Krishna. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. Because what exists apart from the source of everything that exists? Or Prabhupada said it another way. There's no third thing in creation. There's no void in the creation of God. Because void would mean there's something that exists that's apart from the Supreme, like nothing. It's a philosophical nuance maybe, but everything that exists is either Krishna or that which comes from Krishna. There's not a third thing. There's no void in creation. There's no competitor to God. There's some conception in some religions that says, you know, there's God and then there's Satan. It's like a world heavyweight championship. In this corner, weighing 280 pounds, is wearing black trunks, is Satan. He's the contender, and the champion over here is Krishna, and they're going to fight it out. No such thing as a contender. There's no equal.
Asama urdhva. Asam urdhva. Sama means equal. And there's, God is he who has no equal. And urdhva. There's no one greater than him. Or in mathematical language, it's a set with only one member. Those of you that study mathematics. A set. There's only one member in that set, and that's Krishna. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There may be many other sets that all are based upon this one set, but the one set has one member, Krishna. And the last sentence of the purport. In the case of devotional service, this very same method is accepted from the very beginning. And by the grace of the Lord, all factual knowledge becomes revealed in the heart of a devotee by dictation from the Lord within. Therefore, controlling the senses by devotional service is the only and the easiest means. There's a nice verse in the first canto of the Bhagavatam that states what Prabhupada just said here. By the process of devotional service, causelessly, knowledge and detachment arise. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayoja Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yad Ahaitukam. Knowledge of detachment causelessly arise when one engages in devotional service. So, detachment, that's this amalatman of the purification, freeing one from material contamination, freeing oneself from ignorance, freeing oneself from the material conception. The material conception bothers us a lot. I hope you've noticed. It's a problem. And it doesn't like to go away so quickly. Even we're trying to do some spiritual things, this material conception kind of hovers like a cloud. Sometimes sends lightning and rain and problems. Material conception. But material conception is ignorance. And light destroys ignorance. Like light destroys darkness, knowledge. So knowledge awakens naturally from the heart. Because it's already there. That's the good news. We don't have to go somewhere, it's already there. Like Prabhupada taught, I've not come to, when he was addressing the Western devotees, I've not come to teach you something new. I've simply come to remind you of that which you've forgotten. It's already there. A phrase that Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses is svatak siddha gyan, which means that knowledge is already within us. And that's why when we read Bhagavad Gita, we get these things that go, oh, that's right. It's like, it's already, we already knew it. It just like got covered over somehow by ignorance. And then by hearing that vibration or receiving that message, it resonates with something that's already there. And, oh, that makes sense. It's realized knowledge. It's already there. And so that knowledge comes out by the process of devotional service and detachment from other things. This higher taste that leads to detachment from the lesser taste. The struggle of the senses with material things. Daibihi eshu gunamai mama maya duratyaya. Duratyaya. Very difficult struggle. But mamevaya prapadyante mayamitam tarantite. One can easily cross to the other side. So, very nice verse. The ladies are on the rooftops seeing Krishna leave. They know
They've already made it very clear. They know who he is, just like Queen Kunti in her prayers. Right away, she explicitly understands, you're not my cousin, you're not my nephew. You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're the same person that's hid himself in the heart of every living being. And the amazing thing is, you've manifested yourself right before us. And you're playing like, you're my nephew? No way. You're the Personality of Godhead. And I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Oh. These ladies, they've also demonstrated. They're not highly scholarly. They didn't go to big Sanskrit school somewhere or something. But they heard the previous verses explained that they heard. So by this hearing process, if we're just receptive, a little sincere, it acts. The hearing process acts and awakens. Even if we don't understand what's being said, we just hear it. The vibration, pure vibration acts. It cleanses the heart. Which then, so I'll just end with this, that the hearing process awakens the dormant, it stirs the dormant consciousness of the soul, then in its original state is pure. And as that purity comes out, we want to control the mind, control the senses, direct our life exclusively to Krishna, and perform all activities with devotion. And we'll find there's this resistance from senses that have long been out of control, and mind that refuses to be controlled, and a heart that's filled with other things besides love for Krishna. So that takes practice, sincere practice over time, in lots of good association to help us do this process nicely. Krishna will remove those coverings and bring us before him. Prabhupada said that once about deity worship, when installing Rukmini Dwarkadish. You should serve the deity in such a way that one day he will speak with you. He will say, I am like this. So go on serving very nicely. It's the disappearance day of Haridas Thakur, so I want to say something about Haridas Thakur briefly because of time. Haridas Thakur, so many things to say, but Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family in what is now Bangladesh at a time before Lord Chaitanya appeared. So by age, he was much the superior elder of Lord Chaitanya. But even before Lord Chaitanya came to inaugurate the Yuga Dharma, chanting of the holy name, Haridas Thakur was absorbed in chanting of the holy name. That was so because of who Haridas Thakur is. Haridas Thakur is Lord Brahma. And he requested to take birth in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in a very humble position. Following the Brahma Vimohan Lila, Lord Brahma had stolen the calves and the cowherd boys and put them in a cave. Kidnapper. And Krishna didn't put him in jail. Krishna just blew his mind and purified him. So Brahma came before Krishna and offered prayers. And then he went to perform austerities in Navadvipa and saw Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is described in Navadvipa Mahatmya. So he prayed to Lord Chaitanya, "When you appear again, I want to take part in your pastimes, but please put me in a humble position." So he took birth in a Muslim family, but he was from childhood attracted to chanting the holy names of the Lord, and specifically Krishna's name. He's attracted to Krishna, chanting Krishna's name. And he was chanting all day long. Not just, you know, one time. Went on a japa retreat and chanted a lot. All day long. Even figured out mathematically. He chanted 3 times 64 rounds a day. So if it takes, mathematically, it takes 2 hours to chant 16 rounds, then to chant 64 rounds takes 8 hours, and 3 times 64 takes 24 hours. So he must have chanted fast. And that's all he did. No, he didn't do other things. Just chanted. And you can't do that unless there's some taste. And there was such taste that when he was threatened by one Muslim king, "Look, you're causing a disturbance in my kingdom. Why have you abandoned you're a good Muslim, just go back to your Muslim ways and everything will be nice. But if you don't, I'll have to punish you." Haridas Thakur said, this is in Puliya, very near Navadvipa. He said to the king, "I can't stop chanting." He said, "Even if you cut my body into millions of little pieces, I couldn't stop chanting because it's coming from the soul." In other words, I can't stop chanting. He said, "Look, if it's wrong for a Hindu to become a Muslim, whatever punishment is due for a Hindu to become a Muslim, you should punish me like that. For a Muslim has become a Hindu. What's wrong? If it's wrong, punish me accordingly. You're the king, you have every right. I accept ahead of time, I accept whatever punishment you give me." He wasn't chanting because, you know, he had to get his rounds done. He was chanting because it was from his heart. And at the end of his life, this is Haridas Thakur's disappearance day, at the end of his life he was so old. And he was so humble, he wouldn't enter into the Jagannath temple because he felt himself unfit. So Lord Chaitanya understood his mood. Lord Chaitanya gave him a residence up on a little Siddha Bakul, is the place where he did his chanting. So he could see, now you can't see because there's too many tall buildings, but he could see the chakra up on top of the Jagannath temple. And by seeing the chakra, Lord Chaitanya said, "You will be seeing Krishna. You can sit here and chant." And every day, Lord Chaitanya would come. After darshan of the Jagannath deity, he would receive Mahaprasad from the Pujaris, and he'd bring that Mahaprasad and give it to Haridas Thakur, because otherwise Haridas Thakur wouldn't eat. So he gave him prasad of Lord Jagannath and sat and had Krishna Katha, discussions of Krishna with Haridas Thakur. He didn't tell Lord Chaitanya, "I gotta finish my 300 lakhs of rounds, we can't talk." He associated with Lord Chaitanya. But when he became very, very old, he wouldn't even eat until he could complete his chanting. So one of Lord Chaitanya's associates came and saw him. So he was lying down on his back. He couldn't, he was so sick. So this was reported to Lord Chaitanya, who came the next day and said, Haridas, why are you fasting? He said, I can't eat if I can't complete my rounds. And I've taken a vow to complete 3 lakhs of rounds, and I can't do that. And Lord Chaitanya said, you're on the platform of perfection. You don't have the requirements of Vaidhi Bhakti, or you're obliged by Vidhi's rules and regulations to complete your chanting. Chant less. I can't chant less. I've taken a vow. I can't eat. Well, I brought you Mahaprasad. You can't refuse Mahaprasad. Well, so took a little morsel of Mahaprasad. And then he made this request of Lord Chaitanya. He said, you are everything for me. I have one request for you. Please honor it. Whatever it is that you want, surely I will honor it. My request is, I don't want to see your disappearance pastimes. It will be too unbearable for me. Just like this viraha bhav. I don't want to see. Please allow me to give up my body in your presence, holding your lotus feet to my chest, calling your holy name, and seeing your beautiful form. Please grant this one request. Lord Chaitanya said, because of your sincerity, I'm sure that Krishna will be very pleased and will make whatever arrangement you wish. So, like Bhishma Dev, voluntarily gave up his body because he had this benediction from Maharaj Santanu that he could not give up his body unless he so chose. So the next day, the very event happened. Haridas Thakur still lying on the ground, slowly chanting his holy name. Lord Chaitanya came with all of his associates and honored, because he knew this is Haridas Thakur's passing. And resounding kirtan. Like you just had a nice kirtan. Resounding kirtan. Ut kirtan. With everyone dancing and dancing and dancing, and Lord Chaitanya came and sat by the side of Haridas Thakur and placed his foot on his chest, and Haridas Thakur clasped his foot to his heart with tears streaming from his eyes, with looking at the beautiful smiling face of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and gave up his life in the midst of this resounding kirtan. Lord Chaitanya picked up the frail body of Haridas Thakur and, carrying it like this, began dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing in all directions, and went on for hours just holding this dead body of Haridas Thakur like a little child. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went by the sea, by the ocean, and with his own hand, he began digging a place where the body of Haridas Thakur would be placed. The body of Haridas Thakur was washed in the saltwater ocean, placed in this pit, this place where his body was to be put in samadhi. Various flowers and other sacred ornaments were placed along with the body of Haridas Thakur, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began covering the body of Haridas Thakur with sand. And he ordered a big feast for all the devotees in honor of Haridas Thakur. So if you go to Jagannath Puri, surely you'll visit Siddha Bakul. It's one of the most sacred places for all of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And very near to the sea is the samadhi of Thakur Haridas. The ISKCON temple There was a place where Bhaktivinod Thakur, in his, we were observing Bhaktivinod Thakur's special day the other day, he set a bhajan kutir where for long periods of time he also chanted this, I believe it was three lakhs of names as well, at just overlooking, so that you go visit the ISKCON temple, and right there, practically across the street, down a little bit, is the Samadhi of Haridas Thakur. Very, very special place to visit him for and pay your respects to Haridas Thakur, the Acharya for chanting the holy name of the Lord. Very, very dear, intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. So any discussion on the Bhagavatam or Haridas Thakur? Yes?
We read in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, somebody doesn't complete their practice of devotional service, then they take birth, switching out and come down. But in the case of Haridas Thakur, we hear how he wanted to take birth in a very humble situation. So it almost seems like, you know, taking birth in a rich or a strong family would be not so conducive.
He just wanted to be in Lord Chaitanya's association, and it was a mood of service. If the mood of service, the idea of suchinam srimatam gehe means that one's necessities, one doesn't have to struggle for necessities. Now you can misuse having an opulent situation, or you can properly use having an opulent situation. Being in a poor situation or an unfortunate situation doesn't mean automatically one is going to properly utilize it. One can be resentful and angry and why has God done this to me? Kind of a mood. It's part of a lila to be in Lord Chaitanya's service in that way. And suchinam, to be born in a Brahmin's family, or at least so even better than both of those is being born in a devotee's family. Anything else? Yeah?
In this verse, the three prerequisites for being able to see Krishna is rigid devotion service, the control of the senses, and the purified heart.
Well, the third one is nirjita matarishvanaha. That's controlled life. It means you direct your life fully to Krishna. And in by that method, one's consciousness becomes fully cleansed. Here's the translation. Here is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose transcendental form is experienced by the great devotees who are completely cleansed of material consciousness by dint of rigid devotional service and full control of life and the senses. Rigid devotional service, full control of life, and the senses. So,
I guess two questions as you were saying that. So, bhakti, the rigid devotion service automatically brings about the control of senses and the control of the mind.
But we have to make effort. You can say automatically, just like, okay, I'm going to chant Hare Krishna, and automatically my mind is going to be controlled. Is that our experience? What gives us the strength, potentially gives us the strength, to want to control the mind and try to control the mind and cry out to Krishna to help us control the mind. And the direction of one's life also, similarly. That's one question.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I've been carrying this little box with me everywhere I go, and now I know what I've been carrying it for. Pass it out to all of you.